the elephant in the room. The room is almost all elephant. Almost none of it isn't. Pretty much solid elephant. So there's no room to talk about it.
That was Elephant in the Room by Kay Ryan, read by Amit Majbadar. And this is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the pulse of American poetry. That Kay Ryan poem we just heard is in a new anthology that's coming out later this month. It's called Resistance, Rebellion, Life, 50 Poems Now. The book bristles with recent political poems by poets we don't usually think of as political poets. Jane Hirschfield, Sharon Olds, Dean Young, Christian Wiman, to name just a few of them. Yet political they are, in a range of styles that will give readers a kaleidoscopic slideshow of what it's like to be in America in these troubled times, and of the current state of American poetry. The editor is Amit Majmadar, a poet and practicing physician. He joins me from his home in Dublin, Ohio. Amit, before we get started, can I just get you to read that Kay Ryan poem one more time?
Sure. The elephant in the room. The room is almost all elephant. Almost none of it isn't. Pretty much solid elephant. So there's no room to talk about it.
So we all know who the elephant in the room is. He's been in every headline of every newspaper for the past 4, 5, 6 months. What was your personal reaction when Donald Trump won the election?
I was shocked. It kind of looked like Trump himself was shocked.
Yeah.
When they have footage of him, you know, reacting to it. And I think he was surprised too. I think we were all surprised.
Now, I have the feeling that the election led directly to this book, did it not?
It did.
So explain how that happened.
Well, you know, it was actually not even a twinkle in my eye as recently as February. But in mid-February, out of nowhere, I got an email from the poetry editor of Knopf, Deborah Garrison, and she just had the idea of kind of taking the pulse of American poetry at this particular moment. She kind of reached out to me to see if I was interested. And I was definitely interested. I'd been writing about it. I'd been thinking about it. And I knew that almost everyone in America was doing the same thing. And I was really curious to see what America's poets were up to and how they were reacting to what was, you know, so shocking and so probably, you know, one of the more momentous things that's happened in our political life, in our national life in recent memory.
Now, you're an interesting choice to be the editor of a book of political poems, because in the intro, you confess that for most of your life, you have disliked political poetry and protest poetry, yet here you are asking poets to send you political poems to put into this book. What changed?
I changed. I think that's the simple answer.
Was it Trump that changed you, or what else changed you?
No. You know, I think for me, it was 9/11. I think for a lot of people of my generation, 9/11 was when the stupor kind of broke. Growing up in the 90s, the tech boom, and kind of being a teenager then, there wasn't all that much that, you know, we were worried about. And you could kind of float through without necessarily being that engaged with either, you know, national political life or our position internationally. And that kind of security, you know, leads to a certain amount of, I hate to say it, probably in my case, it was a little bit of indifference, and I was mm-hmm. more concerned about getting ahead in, you know, academically as far as becoming a physician. I was more interested in basically in love and education at that particular moment in my life. But with 9/11, suddenly, you know, it was there and you could not look away. And I think a lot of the negative assumptions that I used to make about political poetry, they vanished because it was something that I needed. And I was able to find good political poetry. And I began to realize that good political poetry is like any other kind of poetry. The majority of it is not particularly good. That holds true of every other kind of poetry as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a good political poem does what any good poem does, which is it creates an aesthetic experience that is outside of time and through which the reader can sort of exit time into a moment of aesthetic encounter. But the really interesting about political poetry is that it does that. It creates that timelessness by using the timely.
Well, that Kay Ryan poem we just heard is almost certainly written about Trump. I don't know the circumstances of it. It's hard not to read it otherwise. But that could apply 100 years from now. There's going to be other elephants in rooms in the future.
It takes on a multiplicity of meaning as time goes on in a way that perhaps a straightforward prose essay or editorial column doesn't. You know, that's the artistic element of it, which allows it to have a longer shelf life, I think.
Now, I have a bunch more questions for you about political poetry, but let's hear another poem from the book. This one's by Ellen Bass, and it's called Jubilate Homo, and it's written in the manner of the 18th century English poet Christopher Smart, and his poem, Jubilate Año, in particular, the section about his cat, which begins, "For I will consider my cat Jeffrey, for he is the servant of the living God, duly and daily serving him. For at the first glance of the glory of God in the east, he worships in his way." It's a wonderful and a charming poem. Ellen Bass takes on a completely different subject, transgender people and the assaults upon them. Would you read that poem for us?
Sure. "For I will consider the transgendered person, for he or she may be the servant of a less violent world. For at the first touch of his nipples, he feels breasts roosting like plump birds. For this is done by wreathing his body 7 times round with elegant longing. For secondly, he stains his lips, fire and ice, bruised plum, lasting kiss. For thirdly, he who is becoming she cuts the glands into a clitoral diamond. For fourthly, she who is becoming who she has always been reverses the phallus to a cave of consolation. For fifthly, she bleeds. For sixthly, she lies still with a smooth stent in her vagina. For seventhly, she carries home groceries in the twilight. For eighthly, she sleeps hard. For there is nothing sweeter than her peace when at rest. For there is nothing more fierce than the need to be known. For Artemis cut the soft flesh from her chest, the truer to shoot her arrow. For Joan of Arc cropped her hair and dressed in armor, though it meant death. For jazz musician Billy Tipton married and raised 3 children who discovered his past at his death. For a wife might not question caresses clothed in darkness if her husband's hands make her feel royal. For even he and she are false, for it is tinged with the taste of metal. For words are struggling to be born like any animal. For Tiresias could understand birdsong and read the future in fire. For my task is to praise all I don't understand. For there are more sexes than wildflowers. For the eye of the male and the eye of the female is the same eye, the same dark well of the pupil. For passion's star in a Texas jail, let her be safe from those who have torn the bud of her anus and razored her face. For Fred Martinez, Navajo transgender girl, whose killer crushed her skull, whose killer sliced her open at the belly, whose killer left her dying by the side of the road, let her be remembered. For we are delivered to this small earth spinning. For we are delivered glazed with vernix and blood. For the truest drum is desire. For we can divine but a glimpse of what is. For the streets of our bodies wind as a labyrinth. For we have only one another to cling to be kind to despise."
That was Jubilate Homo by Ellen Bass. Now, Ahmed, that's a powerful and moving poem. It's not explicitly political. It's implicitly political. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think so. But I think if you place it in its historical context, where just last year, you know, transgender rights entered the public eye, really. I don't know about you, but to be honest with you, I had never particularly thought too much about it until it became this sort of hot button issue.
Right.
And that's pretty remarkable. So I think it is, at this particular moment, it is explicitly political. But I think that the way things work, you know, a few years from now, public attention will have moved on to other issues. It will last. I'm pretty sure that this poem is strong enough that, you know, even 10, 15 years from now, or even 50 years from now, I think people are going to be able to read it and be hit by it.
It's also a very daring poem, because I wonder if some transgender poets are going to feel as if Ellen Bass is co-opting their subject. What do you think?
That is a good point. And I think that any time that a poet writes about something so sensitive that's outside his or her own experience, there is a certain sense of, oh, look, you're making art out of my suffering.
Mm.
And I don't think any poet can truly defend himself or herself against that charge other than by pointing to the poem itself.
Other than writing an excellent poem.
Right, and right. And, yeah. And the best defense against that charge is nailing it.
Right.
And Ellen nailed it. She nailed it.
Now, Trump is not known to have any literary inclinations, and very few politicians have expressed an interest in poetry or any knowledge of poetry. So I want to ask mm-hmm. you a question that you yourself pose in your intro. Mm-hmm. How can a poet write truth to power when power doesn't even read poems?
This is a wonderful question, and I don't know if I necessarily at any point answer that to in a way that would make us feel good, in the sense that, you know, we write these poems, but the people that we really want to be reading them aren't reading them. I think the only consolation related to that is that there are journalists doing the same thing, and they have trouble reaching people outside of their own readership, their own pre-selected readership. And just as poets have a certain political orientation, typically in the United States, poetry readers tend to have the same political orientation. So how do you write truth to power? I mean, look, Trump is not going to be reading any of these poems. It's true.
Nope.
Neither is Steve Bannon. Neither is Jared Kushner. I think what we do and what we can do is sort of stand in our truth and be who we are, because who we are and what we do is the opposite of who Trump is and what Trump does.
Yeah, draw that out a little bit. Explain that for us.
Well, I think that if you look at the way he operates, he basically says whatever occurs to him in the flow of things. And you yep. compare that to what a poet does, we vet our words very, very closely. We are focused more on nuance and empathy. That's what makes poetry what it is, and that's what sets poetry apart. Whereas what, you know, his entire platform strives to curtail empathy for the suffering. It strives to close off other cultures, other languages. And even our introspection, and poets are self-absorbed, quote unquote, our self-absorption or our self-focus, unlike that of a narcissist, ours is directed towards the other. We introspect in order to be able to communicate to others. And that's definitely not what Trump does. He considers himself for the sake of considering himself. But above all, you just look at our audiences, both Trump and the media, really, Trump and the media, they have a common goal, which is to entertain and divert the masses. And poetry, as we all know, does not have a mass audience. We are interested in that very intimate one-on-one connection of the artistic encounter and the poetic encounter. And that in itself is as far away as you could possibly get from the hateful man in the red cap at one of his rallies.
Yeah, and that's true for reading poetry as well as writing poetry, I think. It puts us in a very different...
I would agree.
Now, there's no way on this podcast that we can give more than just the slightest taste of the range of poems in the books. It's really tremendous. There's all sorts of styles of poetry in it. But you did something very daring and unusual, I think. You wrote a poem, and it's the last poem in the book, consisting of at least one line or phrase from the 49 preceding poems. What gave you that crazy idea?
I don't know what gave me that crazy idea, and I was fully aware that there was a really good chance that it was just not going to work or that it would be too technically difficult for me to pull off.
Yeah.
So I had a different poem in my back pocket that I was going to plug in if it just didn't work.
Okay.
But I relied on some other people and I put it together. It was a lot more pleasurable putting it together than I thought it would be. I thought it would be more difficult. And I called it Song of Ourselves, because it brings together the words of every other poet in the book in all their diversity.
Now, it's too long to read for the podcast, but can you read the last section of that poem?
Sure. A night of rubber bullets and tear gas. his fat face on my screen. What the fuck are you crying for? Fight and make music after the markets crash. Here, here, like all the mobs in storybooks. Set that on fire. A certain beauty in the duty of it, the pain in which we trust. Knuckle your eyes in disbelief, peer in its lion's mouth. Listen, there were other ends, other reckonings, blackout shades and a brambled mouth singing extinctions. Volunteer, foreigner, friend, what on earth are we? America, America, America.
Now, I was wondering how you're going to do those last three words there, America, America, America. That's the only line that you wrote in the poem.
Right. That's my line. And I, as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, it can be inflected any one of many different ways.
Yeah, it could be hopeful, could be despairing, could be...
could be disappointed. Yeah. America, America, America.
So it must be very hard for poets working today not to write a political poem, in the sense that this is what Trump is in the news, what's happened politically is in the news, pounding down on us and through the media every day. It's kind of hard. Is it hard to write a non-political poem right now, do you think?
Yes and no. I think that there is a sense when you're writing about, you know, anything else, there is this voice in the back of your head that says, look, there's more important stuff going on right now.
Mm.
But I would argue that one form of resistance is perhaps being able to continue working towards things that you hold dear and still being able to follow your bliss artistically in spite of this bombardment that we're dealing with right now and in spite of the travesty that's going on in Washington right now. I know in my own personal experience, at the same time that I was doing this, I was putting the finishing touches on a translation of the Bhagavad Gita, which is coming out in February. Mm. That's an ancient Indian scripture that I translated from the Sanskrit, and mm-hmm. it's something that's very dear to me. It's something that I spent, you know, a lot of time on. And I know that when I enter the zone of that translation and of the commentaries that I write on it, it is, yes, it's ancient Hindu metaphysics and it's ancient Sanskrit poetry. But spending my time on that and devoting myself to that is another way of saying that, look, you don't control everything. You may be the most powerful man in the country, but there is a place where you have no power and no jurisdiction, and that's within our hearts and within our minds, I think. And it's necessary, I think, to keep some place sacred, some linguistic territory unpolluted, if you would. But no, it is difficult. It is absolutely difficult.
Amit Majmudar, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Amit Majmudar is the editor of Resistance, Rebellion, Life, 50 Poems Now. It's a Borzoi book published by Knopf, and it comes out May 22nd. Do let us know what you think of this podcast. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. You can link to this podcast on social media from SoundCloud, and you can subscribe to it on iTunes. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.